Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A champion in that fight is a man I've long thought of as both a friend and an inspiration. He is Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado's 5th Congressional District. He serves on several important committees, including notably the House Armed Services Committee, its Subcommittee on Strategic Forces and Readiness, which bears directly on the topic that I'm particularly anxious to talk with him about. Congressman Lamborn, thank you as always for finding time. I know this is being jammed into a busy schedule, including a classified briefing you're taking at the moment, but it's really appreciated that you're here to share some of your thoughts as to where we are on this budget at the moment.
You're sure welcome, and I'm happy to talk about the budget as it constantly is evolving.
Good. Well, at the moment, one of the things that's a little distressing is Congressman Tom Price, who's the chairman of the Budget Committee in the House and very good man, has seemingly come up with a scheme that doesn't meet our present need, and you've expressed some criticism about it. Talk a bit about that, if you would.
We need to have a fully funded defense. There's just no two ways around it. We live in an increasingly dangerous world, it seems like, especially when we have weak leadership at the very top coming out of the White House. That seems to incentivize the bad guys to act more aggressively. So what I'm hoping we can do is have $523 billion in the base budget and then add roughly $90 billion for overseas contingency operations, or OCO. Things like Afghanistan and ISIS, our fleets addressing those threats, and so on. At first, the Budget Committee was talking about having some of that OCO money in a reserve that, to us, on our services, was very iffy because it may or may not materialize, and if it does materialize, it may be later in the year when it doesn't do much good. So it looks like they're backing away from that, and we will have two pots of money, the $523 billion and then roughly $90 billion for OCO. And I think we can make that work.
You've been sitting through, I know, in the course of the preparation for the committee's markup, the House Armed Services Committee markup, as it's called, of the annual National Defense Authorization Act, testimony from senior government officials and military leaders. What are you hearing from them about the necessity of the kinds of increases that you're seeking in the budget for this year?
What I'm hearing, based on the threats that are out there, Frank, is that that's a bare minimum, and we don't want to go below that. We don't want to go also, for instance, below the president's proposed amount. I mean, we should be doing more than that, but certainly not any less. And we want to avoid the sequestration kicking in, because that puts handcuffs on the ability of the commanders and the Pentagon on how they spend the money. So we have to build in flexibility. We have to let the Authorization and Appropriation Committee fine-tune the spending, also give flexibility where it's needed to the Pentagon to make the dollars really count. So I think we're down the road, Frank, to actually accomplishing that, but we can't do any less than that.
Well, it's very heartening to hear you say that, Congressman Lamborn, because I must say I've been watching this for some time now, and the pressure that you're under, it seems, not just from the Obama administration and others on the left to cut our national defense, but also from some of your colleagues, namely people who are called fiscal conservatives or fiscal hawks, and I think you're one of them in most days, but when it comes to national security, you very clearly understand how this is the first responsibility of our government. And I'm just wondering, what is your sense as to the resistance coming from your friends and colleagues who seem to put, you know, fiscal discipline ahead of national or common defense?
Well, bless their hearts, they want to do the right thing for the future of our country. And a huge national debt, Frank, and we would all agree on this, is a slow-rolling disaster that, as it gets bigger and bigger, is going to cramp our and crimp our options in the future. No one wants that to happen. It will hurt our economy. So I understand the impulse behind it, and I am in full agreement. But let's find savings in the two-thirds of our budget that is social programs and entitlements. And up until now, President Obama and the Democrats in Congress have not even lifted a finger to address one penny of overspending in those areas. There's so much waste, fraud, and abuse. We could save literally billions with very little effort, and people wouldn't starve on the streets or anything like that, and nothing like that. So, Frank, we do have to address spending, but not at the expense of our national security. Let's look at the other two-thirds of our budget. That's everything. Defense is actually around 15% of the budget when you combine discretionary and mandatory. And I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but the 15% of our budget that's military, let's don't take the savings out of there.
Well, especially given that there's been, I guess, approximately $1 trillion cut out of defense spending already between the Obama administration's cuts and sequestration and so on. So it's not like it's being spared. It's just that what has already taken place, and again, this is evident from the testimony before the committee, has put us in a parlous situation. As you say, Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado, especially given the nature and expansion of the enemies that we're facing, and they're being emboldened by this kind of behavior. Let me turn to a particularly troubling issue, and I know you've been very, very supportive of the state of Israel over the years. Congressman, we'll be talking more about it in the course of the program with others, but I wanted to get your take on the administration's response to, well, first of all, the appearance by Benjamin Netanyahu in the joint session of Congress recently, in which he warned about the deal that they're cooking up with Iran. And I know you've been worried about that, too. So maybe comment on that, but also on now the rather stunning victory of Benjamin Netanyahu in the elections in Israel this week. And evidently threats from the Obama administration that it's going to retaliate by ending the kind of protective role that we've played historically in the United Nations as it comes under, Israel does, endless assault from that organization and its members.
Frank, several weeks ago when Benjamin Netanyahu addressed Congress, there was an electric atmosphere, and he was a prophetic voice warning our country, warning the world, what would happen if Iran is allowed to go down the path they're pursuing, and how this administration is negotiating a deal that will be very little in the way of stopping them from doing that. We needed to hear that. The administration does not want to be exposed for negotiating a very poor deal, and that's why they're so viscerally, emotionally upset at Benjamin Netanyahu. With his election the other day, he did have a stunning victory. This administration wants a compliant, left-leaning, liberal prime minister in Israel that they can roll over, that they can get to agree with weak negotiations with Iran, with a weak posture toward Palestinians or Hamas or Hezbollah, wanting more and more territory and further reducing security in Israel. They want someone that they can manipulate and roll over, basically, Frank. And they don't have that with Benjamin Netanyahu, and that's why they're so opposed and upset about his election. They reached out more to people like Vladimir Putin after his so-called election victory than they did to Benjamin Netanyahu.
Congressman, let me ask you, what is your view of the role Congress should be playing in vetting this deal that the president is cooking up with Iran?
Well, the president does not want to send a deal to the Senate and call it a treaty where they would have to agree by two-thirds, and it's a bad deal. I think the Senate, in a bipartisan fashion, Frank, would reject that. And one time, Richard Nixon even sent a deal to both houses of Congress because he said that this is a national priority. I'd love to see the House involved in this where I have a vote. Let's at least have a Senate vote. And if he wants to do it by executive order, you know, Tom Cotton was right. The next president in 22 months could undo with the stroke of a pen whatever is done by executive order today vis-a-vis Iran. And it was right of Tom Cotton to point that out.
A very important shot across the bow. We'll be talking more about it shortly with Fred Flights. Congressman Doug Lamborn, I appreciate so much what you do on the House Armed Services Committee and in the EMP caucus and missile defense and so many other respects. And not least your visits with us from time to time. I hope you'll do it again soon. Thank you so much for your service, sir. Keep it up. Next up, Fred Flights joins us. We'll talk with him about these issues and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by my friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional and a man who has spent a lifetime at the CIA, at the State Department, on Capitol Hill, in the House Intelligence Committee, monitoring, among other threats to our country, that posed by a nuclear-armed Iran. The day of which he has warned for many years seems now very much at hand, in part thanks to the negotiations that the Obama administration has been engaging in. Fred Flights, I'm delighted to have you back with us to get an update. How are you doing?
Good to be here, Frank. I'm fine.
Good. The Associated Press earlier today published the latest in some leaks from the administration, presumably, about the contents of this deal. What do we know, on the basis at least of that report, that we didn't before, or what do you think it's confirmed about what's shaping up, in the words of Bibi Netanyahu, to be a very bad deal?
Well, the AP is confirming repeated leaks that this deal will allow Iran to continue to operate 6,000 centrifuges. The previous number was 6,500. You know, even 1,500 centrifuges would be more than enough for Iran to quickly make weapons-grade uranium from its reactor-grade uranium stockpile. So this is a terrible concession, and it just shows that we have really had our lunch eaten by the Iranians. But more troubling is what the AP is saying about sanctions. According to the Associated Press, sanctions will be lifted immediately when this new deal comes about. Now, the administration had previously said sanctions would be lifted gradually if the Iranians complied with the deal. This would be an extraordinary concession, if true. I'm very worried about it.
Yeah. And again, if true is the operative word here, but it sounds right, doesn't it, that we're watching kind of the administration abandoning all of the past principles and positions that not only it has taken, but in some cases have historically been taken by the United States government. But if sanctions, and by that I assume they mean not just American unilateral sanctions, but also those imposed by the United Nations, were to be removed, Fred Flights, and again, you spent time with John Bolton at the State Department helping to cobble together some of those sanctions, what are the chances that should the Iranians fail to live up to their part of this bargain, bad as it is, that the sanctions would be able to be reconstituted?
Well, let me first say that these extraordinary concessions reflect the fact that this deal's in trouble, and the Obama administration is in trouble, and the Iranians know it. And I think that's why we've had these extraordinary concessions offered. Concerning sanctions, the toughest sanctions were unilaterally passed by Europe and the United States. The UN sanctions were actually pretty weak. And I think that we're talking about Europe and the United States lifting their sanctions. The UN sanctions are weak because China and Russia have used their vetoes to water them down. But there's pretty tough sanctions on financial activities with Iran, oil sales from Iran to Europe. And if they're lifted, it would be quite a boon to the Iranian economy.
And something that is not going to be easily reimposed, presumably, even if it's just out of the European Union. And Fred Flights, one of the things that you've been writing about at our SecureFreedom.org website is the, among other places, is the treachery charge that has been leveled against members of the United States Senate, 47 of them to be precise, who have raised concerns about this deal, specifically raised concerns about the prospect that the administration has advanced that it won't bother to bring any agreement that it forges with the Iranians to the Congress for their consideration, let alone to the Senate for its advice and consent as the Constitution requires. What do you think is the current state of play with respect to both the soundness of the letter writer's position on the one hand and the advisability of what the administration is doing in this regard as well?
It's just incredible that the Obama administration are calling members of the Senate traitors, treasonous, for basically exercising their free speech rights under the Constitution. They sent a letter to the Iranian government stating a fact that this is an executive agreement between one president and Iran, and the next president can throw it out because the president will not allow the Senate to vote on this. According to John Yoo, a former Justice Department official under the Bush administration, there's three types of agreements: a treaty, a congressional executive agreement, and a sole executive agreement. Something this important should be a treaty or a congressional executive agreement. That way, it has legitimacy because it has congressional buyout. That shows that the president is acting on behalf of the American people, not just on his own. This is such a terrible deal. These senators took the extraordinary step of writing a letter to inform Europe, Iran, and the rest of the world that the president is not speaking for the American people on this terrible sellout to the Iranian mullahs.
And you regard that, as I understand it, as leadership rather than treachery, and I concur completely. Fred, let me turn to another subject that you've been following, I know, closely. You have, as I indicated, a background in intelligence matters, an appreciation of security practice, not least having served as the chief of staff to Ambassador Bolton when he was an undersecretary of state. You have an intimate firsthand knowledge of the policy and procedure for protecting classified information in the department. Based on what you know as of now, and we'll be speaking more momentarily with Irene Garcia of Judicial Watch, which has done extraordinarily important work in terms of bringing to light information about this secret email system that Hillary Clinton established. Was that consistent with State Department policy, A, and B, to the extent it was not, do you have concerns as to the degree to which classified information or other sensitive details of American policy deliberations and the like may have been compromised by virtue of the disregard for policy and perhaps even the law by Hillary Clinton?
I'm very concerned about this, Frank. This was not consistent with State Department policy. I would first say secretaries of state shouldn't be conducting any official business on a internet email account or personal cell phone because of the risk of hostile powers intercepting it. She had a secure email account she should have been using, and I think the Benghazi Commission needs to look at that. When she used personal cell phone, personal email, she did not have the benefit of State Department security monitoring to make sure that these conversations, and they may seem innocuous, but even her meetings, her daily routine, maybe dissidents she met with, this is important intelligence that may have put lives at risk and endangered U.S. national security. But there's another angle that John Bolton raised today in a Washington Times piece, and it's on securefreedom.org. Hostile powers may have hacked Hillary Clinton's cell phone to covertly turn them into listening devices, to eavesdrop on meetings and her personal conversations. We know hostile intelligence agencies can do this. Bolton thinks this is a big deal that has to be looked into.
Does he have reason to believe, Fred Flights, that that actually happened, or is it speculation that it could have happened?
Well, his concern is that because she was using a personal cell phone that was not being monitored by State Department security, when she traveled to hostile countries, this could have happened. And I know from my time in government, there are certain countries you can't bring a government cell phone to. The electronic threat is so severe. And when you come back from one of these countries, if you have to bring a cell phone, the State Department always monitors them to see if anything was implanted on that phone while you were abroad. And it looks to me like she didn't go through any of this, and there could be some serious security implications.
It goes without saying, Fred Flights, that this is a woman who aspires, we're told, to being the next commander-in-chief. The conduct, both with respect to her emails and now quite possibly her other communications devices, suggests indifference to basic security practices and procedures, to say nothing of what she's supposed to do. What she herself at one point, as I recall, promulgated was State Department policy. And this just bespeaks a lack of discipline, I think, at best, and perhaps an utter disregard for the national security that should be considered, it seems to me at least, utterly disqualifying for a candidacy by Hillary Clinton. Fred, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. We've got so much more to talk about. We'll look forward to doing so with you again next week. In the meantime, thank you for the terrific work you're doing at the Center for Security Policy. It's deeply appreciated. Secure Freedom is our brand. Secure Freedom is what we do, and you make a very sizable contribution to it. Next up, Irene Garcia of Judicial Watch joins us to talk about protected government informants who happen to be on the FBI's most wanted list. That and Hillary Clinton's emails and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The new Cold War with Russia has just gotten considerably colder, literally. Vladimir Putin has recently surged forces into the Arctic and heightened the alert level of others already in the area. Reportedly, this operation involves large numbers of troops, warships, and aircraft. Putin's gambit clearly seems designed not just to project power into the Arctic Circle region, but to dominate its vast energy and other resources. Unless successfully challenged by the U.S. and its allies, chances are Putin will pull off another seizure of strategic territory, in much the same way as he grabbed Crimea from Ukraine a year ago. Dissuading such aggression will require leadership sorely lacking at the moment in Washington and NATO, backed by the credible capability and will to use force to protect our interests there. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined, I think, for the first time by Irene Garcia. She is an investigative reporter at an organization that I consider to be simply indispensable, and perhaps no more so than at the present moment. It is Judicial Watch. She works there investigating, as does the rest of her team, the kind of information that one would think, well, the United States Congress would have access to, but often does not, including information that is obtained by Judicial Watch through various Freedom of Information Act requests. When we find out what is actually to be found in the files of government agencies as a result of these FOIA requests by Judicial Watch, it often makes headlines and, in fact, breaks things open in an extraordinary way. So for all these reasons, Irene, it's very good to have you with us. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
One of the recent exposés that you all have made possible through obtaining records from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement suggests that an Al-Qaeda terrorist had been getting rather preferential treatment from government agencies on the grounds that he was an informant for them. Talk about what you have found and what the implications are.
Yeah, this is a pretty outrageous case. This Al-Qaeda operative named Don Shukri Juma, Judicial Watch has been following him. He's part of a broader, more complicated narco-terrorism ring that operates in El Paso, in New York City, and a lot of other major U.S. cities. He was killed in Pakistan just a few months ago, but he was part of this big narco-terror ring, and Judicial Watch had connected some dots where he was allowed, even though he was on the FBI's most wanted list, he was allowed to go back and forth from Mexico into the U.S. In fact, he even piloted an airplane. I mean, this sounds like something out of a movie. So we found that interesting. Like, how is this guy who had been indicted on terrorism charges a couple years ago in New York and who was on the FBI's most wanted list, and that's not disputable, that's he was on the list for years, how is he allowed to do all this? So he lived in Florida, and we got public records from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and sure enough, those records indicate that it's likely, it appears that he was a confidential informant, confidential source for a government agency, and it's not clear in the records because a lot of this stuff was, the information was redacted, that he was a confidential informant, and it could have been a federal agency, it could have been a Florida agency, but some sort of government agency, government law enforcement agency. When we called the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for comment, they simply said they cannot comment on who is or was a confidential informant, even though this guy's dead now. So there were no privacy laws or rules that were going to be violated. It's a non-issue now, and so this is fascinating because this is just part of a much broader investigation that Judicial Watch has on on this topic and with this narco terror ring that spans into the southern border, a great part of that region.
Yeah, and I guess this is one of those thorny issues with respect to intelligence, is that if you've got an agent in place or you've got a source inside an organization that you're tracking, whether it's a terrorist cell or whether it's a narco trafficking ring, you may be dancing with some pretty unpleasant company. But the question, I guess, is, was he still very actively involved on behalf of enemies of this country, whether they're trying to dispense narcotics here illegally or whether they're trying to blow things up, even as he was being treated as a confidential source and informant?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and Judicial Watch has pending records requests with various federal agencies. Again, this was from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, so that's at the state level. But we're digging around because this guy, this Shukr Jumah, he helped plan several U.S. attacks, including plots to bomb Oprah Winfrey Studios in Chicago and to detonate nuclear devices in multiple American cities. So he had quite a history, and our question, of course, and what the public should know is, was this going on while he was a confidential source for a government agency and unbeknownst to his handlers at whatever the agency was, or was this going on after? I mean, there's so many questions as to the government's relationship with this man while he was alive.
And was he using the fact of his preferential status to actually, essentially give him the immunity to carry on these kinds of plots? I mean, this is really a scary thing if they were had to have gone bad while he was, being treated this way.
You're absolutely right. He crossed back and forth in this high-level law enforcement sources at various agencies, both the federal and the state level. Told you, Judicial Watch, and we wrote about this a few months ago, that while he was on the FBI's most wanted list, he crossed back and forth from Mexico into New Mexico. One of the times he was piloting an airplane. So it's really very difficult to believe that authorities had no idea that this man was doing this while he appeared on the FBI's most wanted list.
Yeah, it does strain credulity. Let me ask you about something else. And again, our guest is Irene Garcia. She's an investigative reporter these days with Judicial Watch. She formerly was performing that function for the Los Angeles Times. And one of the other tremendously important stories that Judicial Watch has been exposing and shedding light upon, Irene, is this, I guess it's come to be called Hillary Clinton's email gate. And I just wonder where you think we are at the moment. You've had any number of Freedom of Information Act requests in, Judicial Watch has, to try to get at some of the records that are supposed to be public, at least accessible through FOIAs. And we're repeatedly told in case after case after case where you were looking for some from Hillary Clinton, for example, that none existed. Talk about what we now know about where those emails actually reside and what the implications are that they've been withheld from, government archives.
Yeah, well, we now know that responsive to our records request, for years we've been requesting records. We launched a very in-depth investigation into Benghazi, and we've requested records and gone to court against these government agencies when they don't provide the records. And some of these records include, of course, electronic email exchanges between the various officials at the State Department. In response to our records request, we got electronic mail from several State Department officials, including high-ranking top assistants to Hillary Clinton. But what was interesting is that responsive to our records request, never did we receive one email from Hillary Clinton, which we thought was kind of peculiar. And the State Department specifically would say that there are no records responsive to that particular request. So we thought, how interesting. We've launched some lawsuits to try to obtain the records, and now we know the reason this all came out. And the truth of the matter is that if not for Benghazi and the Benghazi investigations, none of this Hillary's secret email account never would have come to light.
And, you know, I just want to say, in connection with the work you've done on Benghazi, there was a perfect example of the truly remarkable contribution Judicial Watch has made. I think the smoking gun memo that demonstrated that the White House, Ben Rhodes, Deputy National Security Advisor to the President, had been involved in the effort to suggest that this was all a function of this bad video, was a function of the work that you all have done with your FOIA. So I really salute you for it. Let me just ask you this. One question that occurs, of course, is what else is on Hillary Clinton's email server? And I gather that it's going to be very difficult for Congress, if not impossible for Congress, to get its hands on that server, despite the investigations, despite subpoena power and so on. Do you all have the ability through your various suits to get a federal court to impound Hillary Clinton's email server? And if so, are you trying to move in that direction?
Yes, absolutely. Earlier this month, on March 9th, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request to obtain Hillary Clinton's secret email system, the whole system. And we will go to court, and there's a deadline of 20 days before we file an actual lawsuit. The State Department has to respond, and so we expect to go to battle with it. We don't think this is going to happen easily. They're going to hold off on this. Another thing is that the Department of Justice could do something, but not with the people who are running it.
And which raises the question, can we get Loretta Lynch, while she's awaiting Senate confirmation, to commit to allow U.S. attorneys to do their job and get access to these not just the individual emails themselves, but also to the servers? Irene, we're out of time, I'm afraid. I'm so appreciative, as I say, for what you personally are doing, what the organization you work for, Judicial Watch, is doing. And we just hope that you'll come back to us soon with further information about the work at and the progress you're making. Keep it up, needless to say. Next up, we'll be talking with Morton Klein of the Zionist Organization of America about Bibi Netanyahu's victory and what the Obama administration seems to have in mind in the way of retaliation for it. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children, asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point, asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently, at no cost, for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we are joined by Morton Klein, one of the men I have come to admire most, notably for his extraordinary leadership over many years now of one of the most important advocacy organizations on behalf of America's security as it bears on the security of the State of Israel. And he is the president of the Zionist Organization of America, Morton Klein. Mort, it is great to have you with us. Your leadership has been felt, I think, almost certainly, among other places, in Bibi Netanyahu's successful victory in the election this past week. I'd love to get your thoughts on that election, the nature of the victory that he achieved, and how you think he did it.
Well, this was a resounding defeat for Obama's campaigned against Netanyahu, and a resounding victory for Netanyahu and Israel. As I said, I'm so proud of the Israelis. They chose security and reality
over fantasy and appeasement. The other side was simply was saying, you know, we're going to meet with Abbas, we're going to give away more land, we're going to throw Jews out of their homes, we're going to give them part of Jerusalem and set up a state as if that would bring peace. While Netanyahu said openly, I made a deal 6 years ago. I would support a state if the Palestinian Authority is demilitarized, if they accept Israel as a Jewish state, if they end in incitement, and there's no missiles or rockets or major armamentarium as part of the Palestinian Authority. Hamas has now aligned themselves. They have missiles and rockets. They refuse to accept Israel as a Jewish state. So Netanyahu simply said, the deal's off. You've not fulfilled any of these requirements for 6 years. And the Israeli people, when they saw that President Obama, meaning America, since he runs America, is no longer trustworthy as to have Israel's back, as to defend Israel and support Israel in times of its security needs, as it did not do during the Hamas war against Israel, when they refused to give armamentarium, when they wouldn't send airplanes to the airport, when they demanded Israel have an agreement to stop the war within a week. When they saw that America was not going to be supporting and defending Israel, they said to themselves, we must go to the strongest person in Israel that will protect us because we don't have protection from America.
Yeah, and that was
that is why Netanyahu won.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Mort, about the role that President Obama played in the election itself. And I think that underscored the perception that you've just described. But it seemed extraordinary in many respects, both with regard to what he was doing in his capacity as president of the United States, but also in the internal affairs of Israel as well. Talk about both, if you would.
Well, it's incredible. He sent his top campaign people from his campaign to go and run the campaign of Herzog and to fight against Netanyahu. He sent them there.
At taxpayer expense, as I understand, as well.
The State Department apparently gave $350,000 to this V-15 group that was fighting against Netanyahu. The State Department, we believe, illegally funded them. Obama solicited funds and got millions of dollars in funds to help pay for this campaign. And because his interest was getting rid of Netanyahu, just as his interest was getting rid of another strong ally, Mubarak. But when it came to Ahmadinejad of Iran, when there were rallies against him, he said, it's not my business and wouldn't interfere.
But he does interfere, even as he was decrying Bibi Netanyahu for coming and speaking to the United States Congress on the grounds that that could constitute, you know, an interference in the affairs of the Israeli electorate. I just must say, this is so appalling. And when you combine it, Mort Klein, with the really aggressive, hostile behavior that the president has exhibited towards Netanyahu as well, it raises a very strong question that I think Americans, not just Israelis, ought to have about what we're doing to one of our most important, if not the most important ally we have at the moment in the world.
Look, President Obama, in his whole life, really, has shown an inclination toward radical Muslim extremists, such as his friendships with Rashid Khalidi, Ali Abu Naima, his defending Iran repeatedly. He congratulated the Muslim Brotherhood when they won the election in Egypt. He called them and congratulated them, didn't call Netanyahu to congratulate him. So we have someone who's extremely hostile to Israel, maybe even an enemy of Israel, in the White House. 20 years at that Jeremiah Wright Church should have taught us that, a church that promoted hatred against whites, Jews, America, and Israel, and he was there for 20 years, and he called Wright a great man and my mentor. That should have told us everything.
Well, to say nothing of his friendship with Rashid Khalidi, one of Yasser Arafat's henchmen, and others. Let me just turn quickly to what you think the prognosis is now for Bibi Netanyahu forming a government. What kind of government will it be? Do you think, Mort Klein, of the Zionist Organization of America, that he has a real mandate with respect to particularly the national security decisions that are now very much at the forefront for Israel and indeed for us?
Look, he received 30 seats out of 120. That's one of the highest any single party has ever received. When he ran 2 years ago, he only had 18 seats out of 120, making it a much more difficult coalition. Now he has 30. And the people who will be joining the coalition are much more strongly aligned with Netanyahu's policies and philosophy. So I think this will be a much more stable and much stronger government than the one before.
With a mandate?
this is as big as a mandate as you get in Israel when you have, you know, 15, 20 parties running. This is as strong a mandate as you'll ever find in Israel. You rarely get more than 30 seats in an election.
And
so,
would
yeah.
you say, Mort, that it is a mandate that was in part achieved because Bibi Netanyahu made very clear that he was not going to have any part of a Palestinian state on his watch, and that he took such a robust position vis-a-vis the existential threat posed to Israel by Iran?
I think the fact that Hamas, the terrorist group Hamas, is aligned with the PA, the threats of Iran, this has really made the Israeli public extremely nervous and extremely frightened. And Netanyahu speaking strongly on those issues clearly was the major factor, in my view, of his being elected. But the Israeli people know that there will never be a state because the Palestinian Authority won't accept the state. Ehud Barak and Ehud Olmert offered a state to them twice, virtually everything they wanted. They said no each time because their goal is not a state. Their goal is Israel's destruction. And if they accept a state, they will have to say no further claims, and we accept Israel. They won't do it. So they're not worried about a state. They're worried about one-sided concessions, which Herzog, Bibi's opponent, was prepared to make.
Yeah. And what we're seeing now, Morton, I just want to close with this because it's a critically important development. We're now hearing, having failed to defeat Bibi Netanyahu, having failed to prevent this kind of mandate from the Israeli people that you've just described, the Obama administration is signaling that it is going to use the withholding of America's veto in the United Nations to block the kind of rabidly anti-Israeli censoring and sanctions and other resolutions that are its daily diet. What do you think that might portend, and what should those of us who appreciate the state of Israel and its importance to our security be doing in response?
Well, we at GOA predicted this possibility months ago. This is a very dangerous situation where he is likely willing to establish a Hamas-Iran-Palestinian Authority. Hamas and Iran will control this. You're going to have Gaza in Judea and Samaria directly adjacent to 70% of Israel's population. But Obama, of course, likes the radical Muslim groups. He likes Iran. He likes Mohammed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood. He likes this Palestinian Authority-Hamas get-together. It is very important, we're working on it now on the Hill, to get U.S. senators and congressmen to urge him not to do this. This is against America's interest to have another terrorist entity in the Middle East, and that's all we can do. We have to let our members of the House and Senate know, let Obama know, don't you dare allow a state without Israel's approval, because it'll be an Iran-Hamas terrorist state, a danger to the United States of America.
As well as to Israel, of course. The Zionist Organization of America under your leadership has been extraordinarily effective, Mort Klein, recognized by the Jewish Forward, among other places. We are grateful to you for what you do, and often in a lonely capacity, speaking truth to power, but you do it better than just about anybody else. We appreciate you joining us from time to time. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.